Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Today is the May 14th, 2013 episode of It's All About Food. And, you know, when I hear that opening to It's All About Food, it just makes me happy. And I hope it makes you happy, too. I get to talk about all these things that I love to talk about in a short amount of time. And there are a few things I really want to talk about before we get started with my first guest today. I've been talking about the swinging gourmets. You've heard about the swinging gourmets. My partner, Gary DeMattei, and I are making musical theater look really fun and healthy, singing about plant-powerful foods and why they're so great to eat and how much fun you can have getting healthy and doing the right thing for the environment and certainly being gentle on the animals. Well, we just got a pay it forward loan from the Pollination Project. Check out the pollinationproject.org. They are seeding projects that change the world. It's springtime, and what a better time than to seed projects that change the world. And if you have a concept or an idea and you need a little financial help, the Pollination Project may be something for you, because they're really helping a lot of people with small loans, but things with grants. Actually, most of their assistance is with grants that they're giving away to people with really great ideas. And I've been a recipient 2 times, so I'm really grateful to the Pollination Project. And another thing I wanted to mention, here in the greatest city in the world, New York City, in one of our boroughs, Queens, the borough that I live in, the very first public school, Public School 244, is offering vegetarian meals, only vegetarian meals, for breakfast and lunch. It's in conjunction with the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food. This is a really, really exciting project, and it's happening in my hometown. Things to be excited about, definitely. And now we're going to continue with my first guest today. Really fun. Rip Esselstyn. He's a native of Cleveland, Ohio. He attended the University of Texas where he was an all-American swimmer. After spending 10 years as one of the world's top professional triathletes, Rip became a firefighter at Station 2 in Austin, Texas. In 2009, he joined Whole Foods Market as a healthy eating partner, and today he travels year-round telling the world about the benefits of eating plant strong with the Engine 2 diet. He lives in Austin, Texas, with his wife and 2 children, and he has a new book, My Beef with Meat. Welcome to It's All About Food, Rip.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Yes. How are you today?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm in New York City right now, getting ready to launch the book, which actually officially comes out tomorrow.
Which is actually today, because this show is airing tomorrow.
There you go.
But I can't see it. In the world of cyberspace, time has no meaning.
Yes, yes.
And you have a book signing at Whole Foods down in Tribeca?
I do. I have a book signing at Tribeca tomorrow night.
May 14th, Tuesday.
Yeah, yes. And then I've got another book signing at another Whole Foods in New Jersey on Wednesday. And I just got done doing the Don Imus show this morning, which was quite an experience.
I remember listening to Don when I was a tiny tot. And he's still kicking, and so am I.
He is. And you know what? Did you know that Don Imus is all plant-based?
You know, I heard that.
Yeah.
And has that affected his style at all?
No, not one iota.
His broadcasting style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember Imus in the morning. I would wake up and go to junior high school with Imus in the morning. That was a long time ago. Yes. Anyway, but let's talk about you. We don't want to talk about Imus anymore. So you're changing the world, Rip, and I thank you for that.
Well, you know what? Well, we're all helping to change the world. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've been doing this almost about as long, maybe longer, maybe shorter. I don't know. I've started on this path around 1973 when I didn't want to eat meat, and then in 84 I went complete vegetarian, eliminating fish. Of course, I didn't realize that scaly vegetable wasn't a vegetable until around 1984.
Yeah.
And then in 1988, I went completely vegan. And so it's been a quarter century for me. seeing a lot of great changes, some frustrating things happening, but something I keep repeating to myself and reminding myself, the questions have not changed.
Right.
And you just have to keep answering them with a fresh, happy spirit, no matter how frustrating it can seem from time to time.
Well, you know what, that's exactly why I wrote this book, because, you know, my first book, The Engine 2 Diet Book, came out in about 4 years ago. And since then, I've been touring around the country, talking, giving presentations and talking to people about eating a whole food, plant-strong diet. And it's amazing how the same questions just kept popping up. And so I wrote this book to be really, in some ways, the definitive guide that kind of busts all the myths, answers all the questions in a very in a friendly way that will basically give people the courage to not only own their health, but also stand up for this lifestyle.
Well, it's important, and it's important for this information to come out in lots of different forms. Yours is coming out in a bright fire engine red form.
Yeah.
And it probably appeals to a certain demographic, but to change the world, we need this message told over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and over in many different sizes, shapes, and colors. And a lot of people need to hear it over and over again. One time, unfortunately, isn't it? I have some friends of my parents. They've been coming to lectures that I've been organizing for decades, and finally the husband of the couple just fell upon the China study, even though he had heard Dr. Campbell speak. He had heard your dad, Dr. Esselstyn, speak, and it took a long time, but then all of a sudden, click, and he is eating great, never looked better. He's in his just approaching 80 and looks fabulous. It's great that you're out there talking all over the place. The question is, how do you do that? How do you travel and talk?
Well, I'm really fortunate in that one of the things that happened is after my book came out in 2007, I got approached by the CEO of Whole Foods Market, John Mackey, to partner with Whole Foods Market as part of their healthy eating initiative that they launched in 2010 to educate not only their 70,000 team member base, but also their millions of customers about what they could do for optimal health. And so I actually retired from firefighting a little over 3.5 years ago to partner with Whole Foods Market. And now I go around to Whole Foods Market stores all over the United States, Canada, and the UK, talking to team members and customers about eating a whole food plant-strong diet.
And what do you eat on the road?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate in that usually wherever I go, there's a Whole Foods
market,
so it's pretty easy. But, you know, whenever I pack my bags, I'm prepared. So I always have cereal, I always have fruit, I always have a sandwich or two. I find that one of the things that travels really well are tacos or wraps or burritos. Just put them in some foil. But I can make it work anywhere. I honestly can. You just have to ask for what you want. You have to look at the menu and figure out what you can make work. And then be nice and say, listen, is there any way you can do this, you know, this pizza on a whole grain crust without cheese and just throw on extra veggies and extra marinara sauce? And typically they're happy to do it, I find that's the least of my worries is how to do it on the road. But a lot of people, that is it can be a stumbling block, but they just have to learn a couple little tricks of the trade and they're good to go.
I could call it an excuse. People look for excuses. But I like your answer. It's something that applies to most things in life. Be nice and polite. And you can get very far.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Like this morning, I'm at this hotel in New York, and I just went down and I got the oatmeal that made sure it was made with water and not milk. And on the side, I got 1.5 bananas, strawberries, and blueberries, and that was it. It was great.
Yeah, you have to know what questions to ask, though, because some people wouldn't even realize that some oatmeal is prepared with milk.
Right.
Although I think in most hotels in the United States, oatmeal is prepared with milk. I mean, with water, unless it's from one of those mixes. But I remember I've traveled all over the world, and you cannot be shy, but you have to be polite. And I was in Seoul, Korea, and they had this beautiful spread at a Ritz-Carlton of foods, and they had oatmeal made with milk, and I had to explain to them it's better to make it with water.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's it is amazing how, you know, if you're – another thing I tell people is don't be shy. Like, so many people are like, oh, I'm afraid. I don't want to you know, create a stir. I don't want to make waves. I don't want to be a nuisance. And it's like, listen, we're talking about your health right now. It's like, it's your number one asset is your health, and you need to protect it with every fiber in your being. So be polite and ask for what you want, but don't feel like you're putting anybody out one iota, because we all know that moderation doesn't work, right? I mean, the moderation...
Oh, I love that. You wrote that in your book,
right?
And
right.
I was exclamation points all over the place.
Yeah.
I can't stand moderation.
Right, so I've got a whole chapter on moderation and how we have to lose the moderation mentality. And, you know, we have somewhere between 10 trillion to 100 trillion cells in our body. And when you have a little bit of chicken, a little bit of fish, a little bit of, you know, low-fat dairy, before you know it, I mean, your cells, they don't know moderation. Heart disease doesn't know moderation. Cancer doesn't know moderation. And so I like, you know, let's go full kale into being healthy and jump in. And do it with a lot of gusto, and then we're going to see amazing results. Your body's going to respond. You're going to have increased energy, sleep better. You're going to lose weight. All your numbers are going to come down, as opposed to, you know, taking the baby steps approach. And I think that, like, for example, what Mark Bittman is doing with, you know, Vegan Before Six is it's good to get more people on board. But I think, unfortunately, a lot of people, they're still not going to see the transformative results that they could see if they were to throw themselves whole kale into it.
I really agree, and I believe in the all or nothing approach with so many things. I think it's easier when you say no to something rather than sometimes to something.
Yeah,
it's just that much harder to not do it at all.
Yeah, and you're also, things are very black and white. There's no gray area. You're not continually feeding your palate with these foods that you're going to continue to crave. So it's much easier when you just decide, okay, this is the way it's going to be, right? I mean, I'm not going to smoke cigarettes, and you just stop, right? You just say, all right, I'm not going to do dairy. I'm not going to do animal products. I'm just going to stop.
Now, you're seeing this all over the place, but in the United States, where the biggest killer is heart disease.
Yeah.
And we know that in like 999 cases, these heart disease cases are preventable, and a lot of them are reversible.
Yeah.
Your dad wrote Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. Is that the title of the book?
Yes,
Preventing Heart Disease.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've probably heard a lot of stories where people have totally turned around. There was an article in the New York Times yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, but it's a story about some guy who believes the heart disease is in his DNA.
Yeah.
And at the end of the story, they talk about, okay, so he's given up red meat, but his wife is making him some sort of tandoori chicken dish, the feathered vegetable.
I know. And, I saw that. I know. I know.
Yeah.
I know. I didn't know. I just read it this morning. And that's exactly why I've written the book, because people – they just don't know. They don't know, for example, that chicken has just as much cholesterol as red meat, that most types of fish have more cholesterol than red meat or chicken. People don't know that one glass of whole milk has the same amount of saturated fat as four slices of bacon. They don't know that olive oil is the most concentrated, you know, source of calories on the planet, and that it is contributing to heart disease because it's 15% saturated fat. So people, they just, unfortunately, they don't know. As a country, we are nutritionally illiterate. And so this is what my beef with meat is all about. It's about getting people, you know, up to snuff.
Well, I think we've been nutritionally illiterate for most of our existence. It's just recently that we're really starting to understand what's going on at a micro level. People have had a few buzzwords for the last 100 years, but they don't know what they're talking about. No one knew. We're just starting to figure it out.
Well, but you know what? But on the other end, you know, all we got to do, it's a simple answer. It's just eat whole plant-based foods. I mean, it doesn't have to be more complicated than that. And there's just, I think the issue is there's so much incredible amounts of confusion and distractions right now that people don't know what to believe.
Yep, they're confused. Yeah. They're confused.
Yeah.
And RIP is here to save them. You don't just save lives in the firehouse, but now you're saving lives with food.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, speaking of which, you know, the second half of the book, another 140 engine 2 plant strong recipes.
Now, there's part of that confusion, the little bits that people hear are so frustrating and damaging. So people will hear about soy.
Yeah.
They'll hear about oil. They'll hear about nuts. And they hear all different kinds of things. And you give some clarification on all of those.
Yes, yes. For example, like, you know, with the soy, I mean, a lot of people, they're scared that soy is the devil incarnate. And I try and let people know that, listen, if you really want to, you know, protect yourself from, estrogen and what can go on with hormones, then if you're a female, then are we still on?
I'm here. Okay, I hear you. Yeah, there are some funny noises there. I'm not sure what they were.
You know, the number one thing we can do is drop dairy. I mean, the lactating cow has 33 times the amount of estrogen levels than a cow that's not lactating. And then, you know, a lot of women are, in America, unfortunately, are overweight, and we know that, you know, when you're overweight, that increases estrogen levels, and exercise helps. But, you know, natural soy, for example, like tofu, tempeh, edamame, these are healthful. They can actually inhibit the amount of estrogen that's absorbed. So there's just again a lot of confusion. And I agree that the soy, the processed soy products that are out there, are just basically, you know, a bunch of junk with fillers, and they bring out the what's called the isolated soy proteins, which have the potential to be harmful. So we need to be careful with the processed soy, no doubt.
Yes, and getting soy organic,
yeah,
and not genetically modified. What a nightmare that is. And a lot of people don't realize when we talk about genetically modified, and when we talk about soy, most of the soy grown in this country is grown to feed animals. It's not even grown to feed people. And when people eat those animals, they're getting genetically modified organisms.
Right. Good point.
Through soy and other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mentioned at the beginning of this program, perhaps you heard that here in Queens, New York, the first public school is going vegetarian. They're serving breakfast and lunch vegetarian meals and nothing else. If parents want their children to have animal foods, they can bring them in their lunch box. And I think this is great, but when you mention dairy, this plan is including dairy products.
Well,
and I would always say get rid of dairy first.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I'm actually, as soon as we hang up, I'm going to go visit that school.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
Yeah. So I'll have to let him, I'll have to give him a little talk on the dairy.
Lighten up on the cheese.
Yeah. Yeah, let him know that cheese is the number one source of saturated fat in the American diet and, yeah, how we get so addicted to it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, this is a great part of the world. People don't think about Queens as much. When they think about New York City, they think about Manhattan, and Manhattan, of course, is an amazing place, but Queens is part of what makes Manhattan tick, and there's so much diversity and great food right here. You can visit the whole world by visiting Queens, New York.
Well, I look forward to it. I don't think I've ever been there.
Oh, well, I can tell you where to eat. Are they going to feed you, or are you going to Whole Foods?
No, I think I'm going to have lunch there.
Okay, well, my very favorite place, it's in Flushing and it's on Main Street, is called the New Bodai. It's vegetarian, it's vegan Chinese, and when I'm out for a treat, that's what I like to get.
I'll remember that one.
Now, people go a little nutty. I didn't even mean to make that pun, but when we talk about fats, and they start hearing that they shouldn't be consuming oil and they should lighten up on the nuts, what kind of reaction do you get and what do you tell them?
Well, I tell people that the best way to get your healthy fats are from whole plant-based sources. And, you know, America is so overweight right now, they don't need to be pounding the olive oil or even doing, you know, a ton of nuts. And I think we talked a little bit about olive oil, but with the nuts, you know, I mean, nuts, I tell people, if you're going to have one handful, that's fine, but just know that one small handful is about 200 calories, and it's about 80% fat. So if you go to Costco and you get a big drum of nuts and you have it lying around your house and you have four or five handfuls a day, all of a sudden that's 1,000 calories that you've just, you know, dropped down your mouth, and close to 800 of those calories are coming straight from fat. And, you know, even with nuts, nuts have anywhere between 10 to 20% of their calories coming from saturated fat. And that's one of the reasons why my father, with his program, doesn't ask his patients not to do nuts, because he doesn't want them to put one iota of gasoline to the fire that might ignite, you know, their heart disease. But most people don't know, for example, that, you know, kale is 10% fat, that oats are 16% fat, that soybeans are 40% fat, that strawberries are right around 6% fat. And we can get all the fat we need from whole plant-based sources. And we're staying away from trans fats, for the most part saturated fats, and we're really concentrating on the polyunsaturated fats. So good stuff.
Yeah, you know, people talk about food combining sometimes. You don't talk about it in your book, or at least I didn't catch it. But what people get confused about is all plant foods are protein, carbohydrate, and fat for the most part. And the body knows what to do with all of them.
Yeah.
We don't have to eat them separately. We eat a bean, it digests the protein, it digests the carbohydrates. You eat greens, it digests the fat and the protein. Our bodies are smart.
Yeah, no, they're brilliant. Actually, I have a whole chapter, I think it's chapter 3, is on how plant proteins are completely complete. And, you know, for a number of reasons, people think that plant proteins aren't complete, and you have to do the food combining, you know, as Francis Moore-LePage
talked about. Yes, another myth that really stuck in our minds.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, plant proteins contain all the 8 essential amino acids, and they're at a proportion and composition that actually is very friendly on the body, unlike animal proteins that leach calcium from your bones, promote systemic inflammation, you know, harsh on the kidneys and the liver, tumor and cancer promoters. The protein you're getting in plants is like a perfectly aged red wine, and animal protein is more like Everclear.
You also talk about the Mediterranean and paleo diets, the two big diets that are getting probably more press than the one diet that should be getting press, although the plant diet is definitely getting its due in the media. But thank you for talking about those two diets.
Well, I mean, yeah, and you know, the Mediterranean myth is just that, it's a myth. I mean, you know, for some reason now, Americans are under the impression if they drink a little bit of red wine, they're doing olive oil and mm-hmm. Greek yogurt, that they're doing the Mediterranean thing. And the reality is, the Mediterranean diet was kind of based off the island of Crete post-war in the 1950s, and it was primarily fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans. And if you look at the Mediterranean Sea, there's 20 different countries that border the Mediterranean. Each one has a different diet. And you go there today, and what you'll find is that Spain, Italy, and Portugal, you have over 50% of the people are overweight or obese. And then you go to Greece, which people like epitomize as the Mediterranean, and they are now the 16th fattest country on the planet, and three-quarters of their people are overweight or obese. So the Mediterranean diet, the original one, was back in the 50s, and it was based on what we're doing here today.
And then we're all romancing about the Paleolithic diet, and we don't even know what was going on back then. We have clues, but it's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah, and the thing about the Paleo is, you know, you talk to any kind of like an archaeological scientist today, and they'll tell you that probably close to 80% of Paleo people, their diets were whole plant-based foods. And you know, I think it's time that we evolve away from meat. You know, for a number of reasons. I mean, it destroys the earth. It exploits the water. It's the carbon footprint that we're laying down by eating a meat-centric diet is four times bigger than if we're eating a plant-based one. You know, if we can evolve past meat, we'd be a much kinder people to the animals that we share the planet with. And then lastly, I mean, I think it's time that we evolve past meat so we can, as a country, have the type of health that we all deserve. I mean, it could raise this country's standard of living to a whole nother level. And if we, as you know, I mean, if we keep this up, we are going to bury ourselves because of this healthcare crisis.
Yeah, why don't more people care about this? I don't know, but it is definitely changing. I wanted to note you have a website, engine2diet.com.
Yes.
That's engine2diet.com. Lots of recipes, and you've got a blog, and your events are listed there.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we've been throwing these weekend-long, we call them Farms to Forks retreats, and we have three more left this year, and we bring in the best and the brightest in the business, and we teach people, we educate people, and then we teach people how to actually incorporate it into their lives.
And it's fun and delicious, everybody.
Yes, it is.
I wanted to give a mention to my friend and yours, Gene Stone, who helped you put together my beef with meat.
Yes.
And the last time I saw him, I have to say this was at the Veggie Pride Parade in Manhattan. He came up to my partner, Gary, and I, and said we were the best vegan chefs he knew. Now, I don't know if he says that to all the vegans he knows, but we appreciated that.
Yes, yes.
We love making food.
Everything, you know, I tell people, I don't know if we're done yet or not. But
we can keep going another minute or so.
Yeah. But no, I have ripples of hope, though. I have so many ripples of hope for this country because I feel like we can't get too much worse at this point. And, and you know, we've got the former fast food president, Clinton, that's now, you know, eating plant-based. We have Forks Over Knives, which has now become the number one selling and viewed documentary in this country for almost 2 years. So that to me is very telling that these conversations are happening at, you know, dinner tables all across the country. We got pro athletes from, you know, the NFL, the NBA, to ultra-distance runners that are learning the benefits of plant-based nutrition. And, you know, we got this school in Queens. We have tobacco crops that are being converted to chickpea crops because, you know, the demand for hummus is so large now. So
I love chickpeas. Let's give a shout out to chickpeas, and garbanzo flour is particularly awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Good old chickpea.
Yes, well, there's a lot of hope, and thank you for being part of it. I mean, everyone, just take a look at this man, Rip Esselton, and you'll see how good this diet is. You are a stunning example.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you, and I hope to meet you sometime. All the best with your book, and be well.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we're back, we're going to talk with Kathy Stevens. It'll be her third time back on the show, and we'll be talking about Catskill Animal Sanctuary and some lovely stories with animals. So stay with me. We'll be right back. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass. We're back. It is May 14th, 2013, and I want to say it really is May 14th because the first half of this show I pre-recorded yesterday, so it really wasn't May 14th, but now it is, unless you're listening sometime in the future. But it's a beautiful Tuesday, spring day here in New York, and it's good to breathe. Really nice breathing going on. How are you today? Well, let's go on to the next part of the show. I can't wait, really, so let's just get started. I'm bringing back Kathy Stevens, founder and director of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. She spent her childhood on a Virginia horse farm. She moved to Boston for graduate school, and after a decade of teaching high school English, she was asked to head a charter school. Instead, 1 year later, she opened Catskill Animal Sanctuary, one of the country's leading havens for farm animals and a center for raising public awareness of their sentience and suffering. She's the author of two critically and popularly acclaimed books, Where the Blind Horse Sings and Animal Camp, a blogger on farm animal issues for the Huffington Post, and a frequent contributor to books and articles on farm animals, vegan living, and related issues. She's an avid reader, loves to hike, swim, and bike, and spends rare quiet time with her close friends. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Karen. So happy to be back with you. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad we got everything all lined up here and everything is working. I hear you. You hear me. Everybody hears us.
Oh, technology.
That's right. And I got your book after much ado. And I didn't realize this at first, but this is a revision of Animal Camp.
This is a revision of Animal Camp. The publisher said they wanted to do a paperback. And I responded with an enthusiastic, oh, no, because it was 3 years old. The hardcover was 3 years old. And, A, we are having a different conversation about veganism, as you know, than we were just 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
B, Catskill Animal Sanctuary is only 10 years old, and so much has happened in the last 3 years that I felt like a paperback, the same book, would be dated and stale. So I asked if I could do a revision, and I did a very major revision. It feels like essentially a new book, so I was very pleased that they let us do that.
Right. Well, some of the important things, or what's important about this book, amongst other things, are the individual stories. And the individual stories about so many of the animals that you've gotten to know. And those never get old. Those never change. And we need to retell those stories and reread those stories. So I was happy to reread some of them because I read them when they first came out and they were lovely then, and I was glad to reread them.
Thanks.
But, people, I was talking about this morning, but we throw out the numbers, we throw out all kinds of information just to get people to think about what we're doing to animals. And a lot of it has to do with, well, you'll feel so much better if you don't eat them and you eat plant foods and it's better for the environment. And it makes me really wonder about humanity when they don't connect the dots and realize what it is they're supporting. But this book is really important, and telling stories is really the way I think we change people.
Karen, I agree. I feel like we've gotten really good for a whole lot of reasons, a whole lot of people working so hard at this that deserve credit, you included, but we've got podcasts, we've got blogs, we've got documentaries, from undercover footage to people out there just with their individual cat, you know, little, whatever you call it, flip cans. You've got protests at the tremendous work of organizations like Toronto Pig Save, who are protesting and, you know, doing peaceful vigils outside slaughterhouses every day. You've got all the medical information out there. You've got all the information on global warming. So I feel like there's, again, far more than just 3 years ago, there's so much more awareness of these three very compelling reasons to move toward a plant-based diet: human health, the suffering of the animals, and the environmental reasons. But the fourth reason is not discussed, and that is who these animals are. So
yep.
I feel like that's the important work of sanctuaries, and that's what I try to, more than anything else, have my books do.
Well, I think when people look in an animal's eyes and have that opportunity to connect, many people are definitely moved. But I think it's still part of this human evolution, because we definitely have a long way to go. And not only do we treat animals terribly, but we treat ourselves terribly. We treat our friends and families and neighbors and countrymen and foreigners and knock ourselves all the time. And we really need to evolve and come from a place of love.
Yeah, we sure do. And yet, despite all that you just said, which I agree with, I also believe that there is an inherent goodness in all of us, and that being among these animals draws it out. And the challenge for us at CAS is to really just back up enough. People don't need the statistics. They don't, you know, they just need moments with the animals to get in touch with that humanity again that we leave behind sometimes in our drive to succeed.
You know, I reread your stories and read some new ones, and I couldn't help but thinking that all of these animal characters are so much like people I know. One way or another. And the only thing that's really different, other than the fact that they look different, is that they communicate in a different way. And we can learn so much from being with animals and communicating with animals to learn how we really should communicate with each other.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we have a T-shirt that says, and I use this sentence a lot when I speak, in the ways that truly matter, we are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's true. I know that that's true. I know that the differences between myself and a pig or myself and a chicken are about as meaningful as the differences between myself and a Latina or myself and an African American or myself and an Orthodox Jew. You know, they're superficial differences. Mm-hmm. They're communicating all the time, and the more we're around them, the more we
learn their language.
Yeah, learn their language.
I keep thinking of this Dr. Doolittle song, If I Could Talk to the Animals.
To the animals, yes.
And I mention that because we recently included that song in our new Swingin' Gourmets project. And it's a ridiculous song, but I really started thinking about it.
Well, and here is the interesting thing that I don't think I would have been, I don't think I was consciously aware of this until we started this work, and certainly a decade into it, it's perfectly obvious now. If you are paying attention to an animal and communicating with the animal that you want to understand what he or she is trying to say, they figure out a way. I don't care what the animal is. I don't care if it's a chicken or a pig. They figure out a way to tell you what's on their mind, whether it's a sound or stepping on your foot or rubbing up against you or a growl. They're nuanced. Sheep are remarkably communicative animals, for instance. So we just need to slow down a little and listen and watch and learn from them.
Well, what you just said opening this whole paragraph was, if we pay attention and if we really want to communicate and understand, those two big mouthfuls right there. We need to be mindful with everyone, human, non-human, and if we really want to understand, we can. It's that simple.
Yeah,
you just
true.
Have to want to. So 3 years have gone by since Animal Camp first came out, and a lot of changes have taken place at Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Can you give us a little virtual audio tour of what's new?
Sure. When we first opened, we converted, we had 80 acres, and we converted a very, very, very forlorn, neglected property. And we now have 80 beautiful acres with 30 barns or outbuildings on it, two big ponds, nice, big, spacious pastures with lots of shade trees. The greater expansion, though, has come in our programming. We, in the last 3 years, we've started a camp, day camp for children called Camp Kindness. We've got a wonderful certified humane educator coming up from the city to spend the summer with us. We're really excited to launch a new camp program this summer. We have a program called Compassionate Cuisine that wasn't around 3 years ago. This is its third year. And we, you know, we feel like so many people, way more than 3 years ago, are willing or eager to begin or accelerate this journey and just need to be, have their hands held. So our classes are, range from everything, literally the simplest, most basic Vegan is for Dummies, Vegan 101, the most basic I don't know what to put on my plate if I take the chicken off, the most basic class like that, to classes for pretty accomplished vegan chefs who just want to expand their repertoire. So that's another new piece. And we're also reaching out even more to the schools. I know that you and Rip mentioned, so exciting, the first public school in the country to go all vegetarian, PS 244. Well, they are coming here for the day.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Everybody's getting involved with that school.
I wept when I read it online, and Amy Hamlin has spoken here before, and I thought, these kids need to feel like they, well, my dad would say, like $1 million. My dad,
right.
That would be the expression my dad would use, because they have done something, participating in something extraordinary, and we want to make them feel that. So I'm so excited. We're busy designing the day. We've got five former teachers showing up to help us, and it's going to be really special.
I like it. I like it very much. I'm really, really curious to see what comes of what's going on with that school, and just hoping that it goes viral and other schools sign up.
Yeah, I hope so too.
One of the things in your book I had a little smirk on my face about was this this table you compared vealfarming.com statements on this website about veal farming, and you gave your commentary. And if only we could do that all the time when we see commercials and media from the stuff that's spewed out by a variety of different
companies. Yeah, the Dairy Council, et cetera. Absolutely. Well, I don't even know how I found out about that website, but I did find out about vealfarming.com, and it they're lying. There's no polite
They're lying. That's it. They're lying.
I mean, I can't even remember the specifics in my book, but my jaw dropped, and I thought, I've got to put this in the book just for people to see how distorted these marketing campaigns are. I also have been thinking a lot recently about how successful that anti-veal campaign was. I don't know if you remember, Karen. I have the vaguest recollection of this. Like, the Humane Farming Association took out whole-page ads playing on public sympathy because these animals are slaughtered as babies. Well, guess what? Chickens are 42 days old. They're 7 weeks old. They are babies. They still have their little baby, their little peep, peep, their little baby peep, chirp, and they still have their blue eyes when they go to slaughter. Pigs are 4 or 5 months old. They're babies. But the big guns you know, the PETAs and the HSUSs, the people who would really have the dollars to get behind a campaign like that for on behalf of pigs and cows for whatever reason, I mean pigs and chickens for whatever reason, haven't done that. And I think that's something that needs to be exploited for the benefit of the animals.
Well, any kind of clever advertising is going to sway people. And I don't remember the ad specifically for veal, but I remember it being powerful because people still today say, oh, I don't eat veal, because they remember those were the babies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
what else are you eating?
Veal consumption has dropped by 75%.
So what? I remember reading that in your book, and I asked myself this question, so I'm going to ask you. And I know the dairy industry is linked to veal production because we can't have milk unless we make a cow pregnant, unless the cow is brutally raped and artificially inseminated and made pregnant. And she has a baby. So what are happening to all those babies? Because we're making a lot more milk.
Well, what people don't know, it was in part because of the success of this campaign that we assume that veal calves are grown in crates, confined, fed in a diet that makes them anemic, all the stuff that was talked about in this probably the most successful animal welfare campaign in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. What people don't know is a majority of calves who are turned into veal, are slaughtered almost immediately after birth, within a couple weeks of birth. And for some reason, that's not talked about or understood, and but it is referred to as Bob veal, B-O-B veal.
Mm.
So that's what happens, and I don't, you know, there just hasn't been a whole lot of attention to it.
Bob veal, lovely. Calves that are slaughtered when only a few days old. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, let's go back to happy stories in the book, because I can't spend a moment there. One piece of good news I saw today was that the governor in Tennessee vetoed their ag gag rule
that they had there. Good job. I saw that, too.
Yes.
That's
so we have to really celebrate those wonderful things.
Yeah, we sure do. We sure do.
Now, there are some celebrity characters throughout your book, like Rambo and Tucker. Rambo, of course, is no longer with us.
Right.
Who are some of the newer characters that we don't hear about in the book? I imagine there might be some new characters that have just joined you.
Well, there are. On the cover, they arrived in time to be photographed for the cover, but not in time for me to include a chapter, is a little guy named Zeke, who is a lap sheep. We took in 14 sheep from an illegal slaughter operation. A guy was not licensed by the USDA and was slaughtering animals in his backyard.
Hmm.
And we took in 14 sheep, and we couldn't get within a couple hundred feet of us. They were absolutely terrified, for good reason. And they have become, I don't know, like golden retrievers, that they follow us around. They insist on sort of draping their heads over our shoulders. They nibble at our faces. And this, I think, goes back to my strongest desire to use this place and my books to help people experience animals in a new way. And Karen, one thing, I was talking with Chris Carr today. I'm sure you know her name.
Yeah, I saw the post that you were on this morning. You're busy.
Busy days. You know, it's like busy days when a book is just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But her audience, and I suspect the same is true in large part about your audience, people who want to eat well are conscious people, and conscious mm-hmm. people, I think, in general, are people who are trying hard to be good people, to be kind people. And we don't intend for our meat and dairy-based diets to be, for our eating to be an act of cruelty. It's certainly a very uncomfortable way to look at eating. And yet, when we eat a meat and dairy-based diet, you're subjecting an animal, I've told a little few of these stories, who is very much more like you than different.
Mm-hmm.
As in 10 chickens are as individual as 10 humans. 10 chickens will pick their friends just like we choose our friends. They play. They have a wide emotional range. Pain and suffering feel the same to them as they do to us. So you go down this path in this sanctuary work, and you learn about these animals in the way that people... We know these animals in the way that people know their children.
Mm-hmm.
We're with them every single day. And so I don't think what I just said is true. I know that what I said is true. And so I encourage your conscious, educated people trying to live a life of kindness and integrity to look at what I just said and to consider that they're subjecting animal after animal after animal, when they eat a meat and dairy-based diet, to a life that you wouldn't wish upon the vilest human being you could conjure up if you tried.
Let's just take that in and think about it one more time. Yep, I'll consider it. I'm doing it.
You're doing it. You're doing it, and you're helping lots of other people do it, so good on you.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, once you, well, for most of us, but once we're at this place, it's hard to imagine doing anything else, and that's part of my challenge in sharing this information with people is I just don't understand why people do what they do.
You don't? I do.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, look, for some people, food is an addiction.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are big marketing dollars behind making sure that it is. For some people, you know, it's part of our family culture. It's part of our traditions. It's a lack of knowledge about how to cook differently. It's buying into the myth that you have to have animal-based protein.
You know, it's like you said earlier that you believe
there's
all this good in all of us, and I believe there's this greatness in all of us, good, and that's what makes it hard for me, because I know every individual has this power to be really spectacular and kind and compassionate.
Yeah, and if we could just sort of stay focused on the fact that one of these days all of us are going to be in our rocking chairs looking back.
Mm-hmm.
And don't we want to know that we gave it our best shot? We want to know that?
Yeah,
and isn't part of that being the kindest possible person? We have the gift. I always say, you could have been a rock. You could have been algae. You could have been a dandelion. The greatest gift one can receive is to receive a human body. Like, don't waste it. Don't throw it away. Use it to do good, to get clear about what drives you, to get clear about what speaks to your heart, and to do good in this life.
Well, that just about sums it up, Kathy. We're at the end of the show. Thank you again for joining me. Your website again is
casanctuary.org. The book is available on the website, on Amazon, and it can be ordered through your independent bookstore.
Okay, and I hope to see you up at the sanctuary this summer. It's one of my favorite places to go.
Please come visit. Yeah, I want to talk about Swingin' Gourmet. Thank you for your great, great work.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, ciao.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to It's All About Food, and I am Karen Hartgless. Thank you for joining me. Send me emails at info@realmeals.org. Love to hear from you, and remember, Have a delicious week.